Hey, friends, and welcome to the Happy Hour with Jamie Ivy podcast. I'm your host, Jamie, and I'm so glad you're here. Each week on this show, I invite a girlfriend to join me, and we chat about the big things in life, the little things in life, and everything in between. From Slate, in collaboration with Ford, comes the new podcast, Life on the Fast Track. Cheer on three Girl Scouts as they design, build, and race wooden cars in the Ford Girls Fast Track Races. We'll meet their families, use power tools, and hear what happens when girls are empowered to put STEAM principles to the test. Download and subscribe to Life on the Fast Track wherever you get your podcast. Guys, you are listening to episode number 183, and my guest is Andy Andrew, who I now officially adore and love, you should know. Andy and her husband pastor Liberty Church in New York City together, and they raised four super cute kids. In fact, one of her kids joined her on her trip to Texas and was actually in the studio with us while we were recording. She was super sweet. Andy recently released her book, She Is Free. And let me tell you guys, Andy and I are screaming the same message to you guys. Freedom's better than bondage. Vulnerability matters. Authenticity matters. Believing who God says about you is more important than others' opinions, and obviously more important than the lies that we continue to tell ourselves and believe about ourselves. I hope also during this show that as we talk about some lies that we were believing and talk about the truths that should replace those, I hope that God points things out in your own life that need replacing with the truth. You guys, I loved this conversation with my new friend Andy, and I know you're going to as well. If you guys follow me on Instagram, you have seen me wear my favorite happy hour sweatshirt nonstop lately. I put it on when I get done with work and I wear it until bed, and then I put it right back on when I wake up. It's just too cozy not to do that. Well, they are finally up in the store and they are ready for you to get yourself one. Head on over to jamieivy.com/store to see everything we have available over there right now. With these new sweatshirts coming in, we put a bunch of stuff on sale, so you're going to get some good stuff over there. And I promise you, the sweatshirt is the softest, coziest sweatshirt you will ever own. Also, if you're not following me on Instagram, today's a great day to start that. Find me at Jamie Ivy. Also, while you're there, look up Andy Andrew as well. It's at Andy Andrew. Okay, friends, here is my conversation with Andy. Hey, Andy, welcome to the happy hour.
Hey, I'm so happy to be here. All the way from New York City. All this land. Yes, all the way from New York.
I love what your daughter said. Tell everyone what your daughter was looking forward to as you were driving out to my house.
She was looking forward to seeing houses that were spread apart.
Because you live in New York.
Because we live in
Brooklyn.
We live in Brooklyn, and my four kids, I have four kids, and they all share one bedroom.
Which is completely normal in Brooklyn, yeah. Am I right?
Yeah, and our place is great. Like, people would say, oh my gosh, like, your place is amazing. We have a really good price because we have upstairs and downstairs, and we have a little outdoor space. So when you have an outdoor space, you know, it's good. Like, you can have a barbecue in the back. And so, but all the kids, we have a big room downstairs, and they all share a room down there, and they love it. It's amazing.
Best. Yeah. I always heard that kids sharing rooms is really good because if you think about it, once you leave your parents' house, if you do like the quote unquote typical journey in life, you know, whatever that might mean, but you head off to college.
Yep.
And usually
you share a room with
someone. Roommate.
Yeah.
And then if you graduate and you don't make a lot of money, you're going to get a roommate. And then when you get married,
guess what? You have a roommate. I think that's the biggest shock of getting married. You're like, wait, you're here all the time. Like, get out of my space.
I know.
So we gave our daughter her own room, and it was a couple of months, and she's like, I would like to go back downstairs. So they're all back in a room again.
I love it.
Yeah.
I say keep that as long as you can.
Oh, yeah.
We just made the transition for my 14-year-old because he was sharing a room.
Yeah.
And it's been good for everybody involved for lots of different reasons. But my three boys were in a room together for years and I loved it because it was like the boys had their space and then we had a play. It was perfect.
Well, no, I love it too. And especially in our small space, all the toys, everything is in one room.
Yes. Praise God.
That makes me very happy.
Praise God.
Yeah.
Okay. So New York City, I told you this already, that Aaron and I honeymooned in New York City. And so it has a really special dear spot in my heart.
Yeah. And now you have to come and hang out with me.
I would absolutely love that.
Yep.
We love getting back. We were actually there the summer of 2001.
Are you kidding me?
Uh-huh.
So right before 9/11,
we were there in June.
Wow.
And so,
oh my gosh,
were you living there?
No. Okay. So at that time, I was living in Sydney, Australia, and I got married.
Every time you say Australia, you say it like
an Australian.
Like the Australians do.
So you just did it again.
Yeah, because I laugh now because Americans say Australia or Australia. Australia. And I'm like, no, they say Australia, Australia. Like it's all Australia. Because everything is shortened there.
Australia.
Yeah. So I was living there and I got married the following year to my husband who's from there. But I remember I was sleeping. It was the middle of the night and my roommate, funnily enough, came and woke me up. And it was just surreal. So that's crazy that you were there right before it all happened.
Yeah, right before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I remember, it's like one of those things that my dad always says he remembers where he was when JFK was shot. I remember where I was 9/11. I was driving
to college.
The world
changed. Mm-hmm. Never the same.
I was on my way to probably an 8 a.m. class here in Texas. Yeah.
So crazy.
I know, so crazy. Yeah. So what took you to... I'm just going to practice.
Yeah.
What took you to Australia?
Yeah, that was good. Well, basically after I got saved at 19, like crazy saved, just fell in love with Jesus and was talking to someone. I actually dropped out of college, which I never recommend to anyone. But I just remember the day that I gave my life to Jesus, I said, all I want to do is build your church. And I actually had no idea what I was saying because I had no context for that. And it took me on this journey where I had heard, you know, the song Shout to the Lord.
Yes.
So that song was playing at my church. And I was like, gosh, this is beautiful. How cool would it be if this church had a Bible college? And someone in the room goes, well, they do. And so I looked it up. I probably Yahooed it or MSN, you know, way back then. And I was like, well, why wouldn't I just save some money and go there? So basically that's what took me there. And I went in 2001.
Yeah.
And then lived there from 2001 until 2010. Yeah.
So you went and stayed.
Yeah. Yes. To my mother's dismay.
Yeah. Because you met a boy.
Yeah. I met a boy. And what's funny about that even is I wasn't looking and he wasn't like the type of guy that I thought I would be with. But he, I mean, that's a whole long story. But ended up marrying him a year later. I mean.
A year after you got there?
Yeah. So moved there in 2001. It was about a year and a half.
So, hey, mom and dad, I'm moving to Australia. Yeah. A few months later, I'm getting married.
Yeah. Yeah. So we moved there and then I had a 6-month period and then we started dating.
Okay.
And we broke up and then I was like, I'm crazy. It took him, you know, all of the stories.
We all have the story.
I was like, no, it's wrong. Oh my gosh, I can't live without you.
Right.
So, and then we decided it was about 9 months later or so. And we were married because he's 5 years older than me. He didn't really date. And so when he pursued me, if you will,
it was for marriage.
He was like, we're not going to mess around. And you know what? Because of my past, I was like, well, if I'm going to date someone, I don't want to mess around either. I don't want to be like, hey, let's try this out. I had had my heart broken way too many times.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, and then we ended up deciding Australia was home. Yeah. And so I had our first 3 kids there.
Wow.
Yeah. So they're dual citizens. And then our youngest was born in Brooklyn and he's only American.
He's like, I got the short end of the stick. That's for sure.
Well, he right now, and he doesn't know yet. So hopefully we can get his paperwork done. He can be dual as well.
Can you just do that? Because his dad
can do it.
Yeah.
We just kind of haven't because New York is home. Yeah. So I think, you know, in the future, our kids could live in either country and except Sam.
Except for
sorry, Sam.
Sorry.
I love you.
Okay. So give us how you got from, well, I know how you got to Australia, but how did you guys get to New York City?
Yeah, I know that. Okay. This will sound like a crazy story. So when I had my first son, he was 6 months old and, I often have dreams, of a prophetic nature. I know that's not the normal way that God speaks to everyone, but I have since I was little remembered that I had dreams and then things would come to pass. And sometimes it's just too much pizza. So I'm very aware that they're not all that way. So when our eldest was 6 months old, I had a dream that we were in New York City on a subway and I had 3 kids that looked like stair steps. And we were on a subway on the way home from a church that we had planted. And I woke up and told my husband, I said, hey, I think we're going to plant a church in New York one day, which is insane.
Were y'all going to plant a church? Was that even on the horizon?
We had no desire to plant a church.
Okay. So it wasn't even like, we've been talking about planting a church and you're like, I think it's New York City. Okay.
We were on a great team. We were, you know, serving and happy and like planting a church was not on the radar. So long story short, fast forward 3 years, 3 kids under the age of 3 that are stair steps.
That's a stair step for you.
And my husband is building his own business. I come off staff because my kids are so, I was like, I have to be with my babies because they're so young. Decided to be a stay-at-home mom in that season. And then the dream came alive. And so we're like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. I remember I was journaling going, okay, what are we going to do? And reading the book of Acts, like, how do you plant a church? Like, this is how they started. And the Holy Spirit just said to me, hey, your church will be called Liberty because you'll bring freedom to the captives. And in that season, I was very captive. So I laughed, like Sarah laughed. Mm-hmm. I was like, sure,
right.
Sure, we're going to do that. But I said, don't tell your husband. Fast forward a couple of weeks later, and my husband, we decided to take a trip to New York to spy out the land since we had never been there. And think
so
we're going to-
you'd never been. Was it his first time to the States? Please tell me yes.
Well, he had been to visit my family on the West Coast.
Okay.
Yeah, so which is where I grew up. So he says, I feel like when we go on our trip there that God's going to speak to me on the Statue of Liberty. And I'm like, okay. And he never talked like that. And he goes, I think I know the name of our church. And I'm like, what? And he goes, oh, it may be dumb. I'm like, maybe it's not. And he goes, I think it's called Liberty. And I nearly died. I grabbed my journal.
I just got chills.
Right? I grabbed my journal. I open it up. And he's like, oh, my gosh. And then he bought all the web domains with the word Liberty Church in it. And then when we went, God spoke to him, sure enough, on the Statue of Liberty and like broke his heart. He wept. I mean, embarrassingly wept in front of every tourist as he just saw like the hand of God, right? The generations will call you blessed. You know, just understanding our grace would be to put a seed in the ground and probably when we're gone, like there would be a multiplication factor that we may not see. And then he said, okay, that's great, God, but maybe give me a financial promise. And God didn't and said, well, no, I'm going to ask you a question. What would you give for a city? And as he wept and said, we'll give everything. We will give absolutely everything for this city. And so went back, talked to our pastors. They blessed us. I mean, it's a longer story than that.
For sure.
Sent us. And we sold everything except for a few things that mattered to us and moved to a tiny apartment and started a church with 9 of us around a picnic table in Central Park studying the Book of Acts. And that's how we got to New York. Yeah.
Wow.
We knew no one, like had no one except for
a picnic
table
in Central Park.
Yeah. Upper West Side. Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
Oh, and now, how long ago was that?
That was 7 years ago. We just had our 7th birthday.
Okay. And what's the church look like today?
We have 7 beautiful communities and about to plant our 8th. And so that's kind of how we've done it, is that we have community pastors. New York, as you know, is very community oriented because mm-hmm. it's such a big city. You got to kind of break it down into smaller areas, mm-hmm. you know? So we have community pastors over each of those, which are just some of the most phenomenal couples and people that are in the Upper West Side, Union Square, downtown Brooklyn, and in Wall Street. And we've got one that's going to be in South Brooklyn and Bay Ridge. We've got a community that they're planting next month. And then we've got a community that is in Manzini, Swaziland, which is a local couple that are just, phenomenal. And that's a beautiful story, too, of how that came to mm-hmm. be. And then we've also got a community that just planted in San Francisco that's right in the red light district. I mean, when we planted it, people were showing up at the clubs next door and we're inviting them to church. It's the coolest. And then we've got one in St. Petersburg, Florida. Beautiful. All just these homegrown couples that mm-hmm. have a heart to plant churches, and we love to release people into that.
I love it.
It's a lot of fun. So small communities, but beautiful communities that are for their community to reach the people that are in their spheres of influence. Because really, we're the 1%, they're the 99%
right.
that are reaching people in their area.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay, well, next time we come to New York City, we'll have to come visit you guys.
Please
at one of your
do.
Communities.
Yeah, we love that.
And I remember, you live in Brooklyn?
Yeah, we live in Brooklyn.
Okay, so we walked over the bridge.
Yeah.
We went to a brewery there. Like, I'm sure there's like,
I
can't even tell you. Like if Aaron was here, he would know exactly where we were.
I bet you it was down in the Naval Yards. Were you in the Naval Yards maybe?
I don't even
remember. Down in Dumbo? Possibly. Yeah. I mean, there's some cool breweries even down in Red Hook in Brooklyn. Yeah.
The last time I think Aaron and I were there together, just two of us on a vacation, was I think maybe 7 years ago.
So right when we got there.
Yeah, yeah. So we were there. And then we were there last Christmas. We got stranded there.
Oh.
Which it sounds fabulous, but it's not. No, it wasn't. We had been in Spain for a week.
Yeah.
And then we couldn't get out of New York City. I mean, and I never experienced getting stuck in a city where she said, we can get you home in 3 days.
That's not the dream.
I was, and what?
You're going, this
wasn't
the
days?
3 days.
So I had 2 of my kids and 2 of them were here. And so I was just like,
and that's hard too, because the other kids that aren't there, you're like, I'm sorry. Otherwise, if everyone was there, you're like, fine, we'll go out and play. Cool.
So we did. And it's funny because Aaron was finishing writing a book. And so it was due literally like 3 days.
The pressure
of that. And so we got stuck there. And so he would write in the mornings. And 2 of my kids, we just kind of went out. And I was so proud of myself, Andy. Literally, I wanted a reward every day, because when I travel, and Aaron's with me, I do nothing.
Because
I don't have
he's
a credit
the organizer.
Card. Yeah, I don't do anything.
No, I'm the same. Like, it's like I just, I go on autopilot.
I turn into like a 1950s wife. Yes, and he's totally. Like, what do you want to eat? I'm like, whatever you want. I don't know, babe, whatever. I don't care. Literally.
I'm not bringing my purse because you have the credit card.
Yes. Yeah. And so I felt like just mom of the year, woman of the year.
And
like
you're
just
walking the streets of New York. You're on the subway. You're calling cabs.
Well, okay. No. I Ubered.
Ubered?
I was like, but how good we're is not Uber? Getting on the subway, but I did Uber. But we went to museums all by ourselves. We went to the 9/11 museum, which I'd never been to.
Oh my gosh. How were your kids going to?
You know, they were good. It was the day we were leaving. And so we had like 2 hours, and I tell everyone you can spend like 7 hours in there.
Yeah.
I mean, it is intense.
Yeah, it is.
And have you been?
I actually haven't been.
Okay. So there's this one room where it's almost like, it has pictures all around it. I believe they were frames maybe. And then they show a like movie and it's each person who was killed. Yeah. And then someone's talking about them.
Yeah.
I sat in that room and just wept like a baby.
And that's why I think for me, I'm one of, cause I don't know about you, but I'm like I feel everything. So I have to like gird myself and probably go alone first before I would bring my kids. Cause I'll be like on the floor, they'll be picking me up. So I'm so glad you went though. But we have a lot of friends when they'll come in town, they go there.
Yeah.
So
I highly recommend
it. Gotta get myself ready.
But you do need to be prepared because it is, it's just tragic. And it's almost like, I remember the first time I went to the Holocaust Museum.
Oh my gosh.
I was a teenager, I think. Yeah. And it was really overwhelming.
Poignant,
and
just overwhelming.
There, and you're, you're a teenager. And so I was very sheltered. And
so taking all of that, this happened.
This happened in our world. Real. Under our watch. Yeah. It was hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyhow, well, New York City, I'm a fan. Love that. Okay. So you recently released a book last fall.
Yeah.
Your first book.
My first book.
I just released mine.
I know.
And so I'm feeling all the feelings that you already went through.
Yeah. I'm amazed that you have me here because you you are in the middle of it. So
it was a whirlwind.
It is a whirlwind. And it feels like almost having a baby, or it feels like a wedding day. It feels like there's so many emotions that come with it.
Yes.
But it's so much fun because you really realize I did that.
Yeah.
Like I wrote that and cool. I worked so,
so hard on it.
So well done to you.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you wrote a book called She Is Free. And as I was reading through parts of this book over the weekend, I realized that you and I have such similar stories.
Oh my gosh.
And such similar just kind of anthems and desires for women that this is like my heartbeat.
Oh,
my
heartbeat.
Okay. So I'm going to start out. I'm going to read some. Okay.
Awesome.
So this is just your introduction. And I think it sets the stage for why you wrote this book. And it makes me just so happy. So here it goes. You said, how often have you heard this phrase? The truth will set you free. All the
time. I know. Out of context, all the time. Right?
Yeah. Many times it is out of scriptural context. This line by itself is used in movies, churches, devotionals, and countless conversations around the world. But the truth alone can't set you free because it depends on what truth you're holding on to. Is it your own truth, the world's truth, your neighbor's truth, Buddha's truth, the government's truth, pop culture's truth? What about the truth of your past and pain, or the shocking truth of your present reality that hurts more than anything? All of these truths will fade away. Yet there is one whose truth is eternally unshakable because he is truth incarnate, the word made flesh. This is the truth that we can align our lives with to live in freedom.
Yeah.
And I read that and I thought, golly, that just sums up so many things of why we cling to lies, which your book is about, the lies that hold us captive. Yeah. And I was thinking, why do we cling to those? Like, they kind of make us feel quote unquote good because we get comfortable in them.
Yep.
But they become our truths.
They become our reality.
They become our realities. Yeah. So I want to talk about some of these things from you, but this has to be a hard book for you to write because you had to pour out, I'm going to tell you some lies I was clinging to.
It was a very hard book to write. That was one of the things I think no one told me is that if you're going to write a book and put it out there, like what you're going to have to contend for and what might even come against you as you write it. But more than that, it was like uncovering things that I'm like, oh my gosh, I got healed along the way, even as I wrote it. But the breaking down of things that I realized that I had bought into a lie and it had grown and become my reality over time is sometimes the hardest thing to face because you're like, this has been my comfort. Mm-hmm. This has been my reality. This has been what I've clung to. And then to go, that is a farce. That's not true. And that doesn't bring freedom. Mm-hmm. But to dismantle that and then hold on and cling to the truth is a journey that I'm still on. I think that's the thing is like, this is more of a manual. Like, hey, when you're having a rough one, pull this off the shelf and go back to it. But it was a hard thing to cling to and write.
Yeah. I remember when people, and I see this in your book as well, is a lot of my story that I wrote about, I feel I'm like Don't live in that shame.
I can't wait to read it.
I don't live there. But going back and writing about it was so hard.
Well, don't you feel like it's almost, and I kind of write about it, it's like facing the pain to heal the pain. It's one of those things that nobody wants to do that. Like, this is why we avoid counselors or conversations, or because you know you have to go there.
Yeah.
And so then even the editing process, I was like, oh my gosh, do I have to read it again?
I know, right? I remember the first time I went to a counselor.
Yeah.
I dreaded it because I almost knew what was going to happen.
Yeah.
Like, I almost knew, like, you're going to make me think about things that I have tried my entire life not to think about.
Totally.
And on one hand, we're rational people. So we're like, I know I need to.
I'm good. I'm good. I know I need to.
We kind of
surviving.
Yes. Yeah. It's this false sense of security that we feel good in our mess.
Yeah. 100%. And it's kind of like, it's become part of who I am. So, you know, it's good.
Yeah.
Like, I'm good.
I'm kind of crazy.
And look like, how
I'm
strong just, I am. Yeah. And look how, you know, I'm a little bit psycho on the side and I hope that nobody really knows. Yeah. But yeah.
We kind of like own that though. Oh, and yet there's so much freedom on the other side.
There really is.
When we cling to that truth.
And I think that, I think that's the thing too, is like going from a place of heartbreak to feeling like is this really how it's going to be forever? Is this really what following Jesus and being a Christian is about? Mm-hmm. That I read these truths, but I don't live in them. And I think that was one of the most heartbreaking things for me, is feeling so in bondage and everyone thought I was fine. And I'm like, how do I actually walk this out? Because I know there's got to be more. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And then here's the bridge you also have to cross.
Yeah.
When you finally realize, okay, I'm not okay, but everyone thinks I'm okay. How do I tell them?
Yeah.
Do I break down this image that I've created?
Well, and sometimes yes.
Yeah.
I think in some circles or friendships, I mean, I think one of the hardest things about doing that is your friend circle may grow a little bit smaller. And that was a hard thing, because then you're dealing with rejection. Mm. Then you're dealing with all of these things that you feared the most.
You've kind of put up walls that you don't have, so you don't have to get them.
You reject them first, really, before they reject you. Yeah. You're just like protecting yourself. You're isolating yourself even in public settings, you know? So I think you're right. When you break down those facades, that's where you're like, ooh, I'm about to find out who's really with me. And it obviously, you know, the Father is with you, but who's with me? Who are my friendships? So it's scary.
It is scary.
It's scary to break those things down.
Totally scary.
But it's amazing all at the same time and worth it.
It's worth it on the other side.
On the other side. In it, it's not fun, but you know,
it's
worth it.
But it's where you grow.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's what we want.
Yeah.
We want to become more like Christ.
Right.
And that's actually what it looks like. It's messy.
Newsflash.
Yeah.
We hate to break it to you guys, but it's going to be hard.
Yes. And you should do it.
Yeah. Totally. Okay. So, she is free.
Yeah.
Learning the truth about the lies that hold you captive. You go through and you talk about probably 6 or 7 different things that you've kind of walked through. I want to touch on a few that I've also had to deal with.
And
so let's just do it.
Yep.
You talk about freedom from unforgiveness and you tell a story, which you can dive into more.
Sure.
About a conversation that you had one day with your mom.
Yeah.
What did that look like for you?
Well, you know, I had just gotten saved, so it was like rainbows and unicorns, you know, like for real. Like, I met love. Like, I walked in, it was when Delirious was singing, you know, I Could Sing of Your Love Forever. And I walked into a church service and I was like, what is this? You know, the love that I had been looking for. And so I think I was in that space of like, I can't believe I found this love. This love found me, like, or, you know, it was always there and I finally let it in, you know, however you want to look at that. And so when I sat with my mom and then started to ask questions about our upbringing, we were just out to coffee. And started to ask questions about our upbringing. And it was almost like the truth was the truth of our past, the truth of our reality that maybe I had ignored. I'd always felt, but ignored, started to come there right in front of my face. And I was devastated. But when I asked my mom some pertinent questions about her past, and she was honest with me and she just started sobbing, I started swearing at her. I made a scene in that coffee shop because I was so angry that of how I felt betrayed by my mom and dad. And so, it was a devastating moment. And then I just kind of broke ties with my mom, even though I lived in the same house. Then I moved to Australia as far away as I possibly could. And really just made her pay for years.
Golly, we do that so many times.
I felt justified too.
Yeah, because you deserve. She deserved
it. I'm a judge.
Yeah.
I'm judge and jury. You're welcome. Uh-huh. Like, how dare you do this to me while I was growing up?
But then your mom said this. You wrote this.
Go ahead, say it.
It says you're in the house with her a couple weeks later, and she looks at you and she says, Andy, I only hope you can forgive me one day like I know Jesus has forgiven me.
Mom dropping bombs. Yes. Was like, I hate you more now. No, I'm
yeah,
just kidding.
Exactly. Truth bomb. Go away. Right there.
Yeah.
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 Because she had already walked through some hard things.
I mean, and now I look back, I look at my mom and dad, and they're two of my heroes. You know, if anyone can sit and have a coffee with my mom and dad, I would recommend it. When you're in Brooklyn, I'll let you sit with them.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you're right. That seed was planted, and I'm glad it was, because 7 years later is when that came to fruition, when forgiveness truly came forth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
7 years later.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of people live with this, like, you hurt me.
Yeah.
You're out.
You're out.
You're out.
You're out. Yeah.
But did it feel good for 7 years, or did it feel hard?
It felt hard.
Yeah.
And I think it felt confusing. It felt like everywhere was a landmine. You know what I mean? I want to preface this. There are some of you that are listening that are going to be like, well, there are people that are unsafe that I should not.
For sure.
Okay. I'm not talking about unsafe relationships. I'm talking about relationships where you can have reconciliation and redemption. And forgiveness is always wise, even if you should not. Even if you should have strong boundaries and not be around them. With my mom, there was meant to be reconciliation there, but it did not feel good. No, I was angry. I was bitter. And then, I mean, the rest of the book, I basically operated in multiple things, because when unforgiveness is your shelter, you protect yourself with lots of other things like anger and control. And so it was rough for my husband and my children that came after. Like, I was not a fun person to be around, you know?
Well, you talk about how then you... You read something by Lisa Bevere, which she's been on the show, and I adore her.
Yeah.
And so you had this moment, I believe it was John 8 with the adulterous woman. So, which is, it's one of my favorite chapters to teach to women, because it is this such a beautiful example of the way that Jesus reacted to her and her sin and her life. Yeah. And it is the exact opposite of how we react.
Of how
most
we
times.
React.
Yes.
Totally.
Yes. Yeah.
And that was huge for me. It's so funny, because I was reading Kiss the Girls and Made Them Cry. Like, it had nothing to do with forgiveness, if you will, but she broke down the story of John 8. And I was on our baby moon, pregnant with my first child, and the Holy Spirit spoke to me and said, hey, would you want your children to treat you the way you're treating your mom? And I was like, so it was like, it's time. And that's when I started sitting with a counselor for almost 2 years every week.
Wow.
You know, into having my first child. But as I read that story on our baby moon with my big belly, I just remember reading it and I fell to the ground, like seeing my mom for the first time forgiven and loved. Like, Jesus was showing me how much he adored her. Rewind back to her statement. I only hope you can forgive me as much as Jesus has. So I'm down on the ground weeping, asking for forgiveness. And the Holy Spirit goes, that's so good. Yes, you're forgiven, because you were the Pharisee that threw her at Jesus' feet, at my feet. And I'm like, you know, when you should be down on the ground just repenting. And so I did. I repented. And what was beautiful is she was there just about a month later when I was ready to give birth to Ezekiel, our first boy, Ezekiel Benjamin. And we just sat. I mean, I don't know. Were you going to go to that story? Were you going to tell us? Go ahead.
I could, because I was just like, was feeling you. Well, I was going to say that you wrote this after she came to your house. You said, Mom, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry that the last 7 years I've hurt you and made you pay for the sins of your past. I'm sorry that I've held such judgment and disdain for you, making sure that you felt every bit of it. I'm sorry that I made you feel like you're the only one who has sinned in this world. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry that I've been so self-righteous, acting as though I'm perfect when I know so deeply that I am not.
Yeah. Yeah. And we were sitting there, even just going back to that moment, it was like God made all things new before we birthed the next generation. Mm. He's like, we're going to close this door and take care of this. And we were folding my son's clothes, and we just wept and held each other. And, you know, I guess I do have to say, my mom and dad live in the same apartment building as us. They live upstairs.
I love that.
Yeah. So my kids treat it like it's one house. Uh-huh. The neighbors love us.
Yeah,
love
I'm sure.
Love you, neighbors. But, you know, we still have plenty of opportunities to work on reconciling our relationship. You know, it's like, it still is being healed even as we go, because things pop up in a relationship where I'm like, ooh, that still hurts. Or I'm still mad at you. And, you know, however many years, my son's 12 now. And so 12 years on, and God has done so much. Yeah. But it started with that. It started with just, hey, we're going to choose to forgive each other and reconcile. Yeah.
You know, on like a much lighter level, I have a 14-year-old.
Yeah.
And as soon as I think like, oh my gosh, my parents, I wish they wouldn't have been like this.
Right.
I think, okay, what are my children going to say about
me?
Yes. And I think that is a really wise thing for us to think. And I think God is really kind to give us kids that we're also going to mess up.
Hey, you are so not perfect. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm not.
I know. The other day, I don't even remember what I was doing, it wasn't even something bad. And my daughter made a joke because she is just really, she's got this comedic timing that makes me really mad sometimes, but it's really funny. And she just goes, oh, I'm going to need counseling for that one.
Oh my gosh, I was like,
you're so right.
And I'll pay
you
for it.
You are. And I'll pay for it. But it just makes me think that like, we're just all broken, sinful people doing the best, that we can.
Well, I mean, okay, let's be honest here, because I mean, why not? Let's continue to be honest.
Yes.
Is that, you know, even just a couple of weeks ago, I was sitting with a counselor who we were talking through some stuff that I was still working on. And he just said, you know, I really do believe that people are doing the best with what they have. And that's almost how you can forgive. But then you have to realize you have unmet needs that you grew up with or whatever that is. We're trying to fill them with multiple things. Mm-hmm. And we just need to go to Jesus to get those needs met so that there is nothing, Jamie, that you can give me that God hasn't already given to me. And there's nothing you can take from me either. Mm-hmm. That's hard.
It's hard.
That's a lifetime thing. I think even, but so I guess I realized though, I'm grateful to have that real revelation of being a parent. Cause once you become one, you're like, oh my gosh.
I mean, we're just, we're broken people raising broken people.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're on this journey of wholeness and every single one of us are.
Yeah.
So
Parenting does that. It helps us reflect and look back.
Oh my gosh. It's changed me more than I knew it would. I knew it would, but I had no idea.
Totally true. The truth you say about forgiveness is forgiveness releases me from the prison I find myself in. I may or may not feel like forgiving, but as I choose to engage my free will, true forgiveness from my heart has the power to set me free.
Yeah. Yeah.
It does. And I like what you said earlier when you said, even if it's not a safe situation, there is power in forgiving that no matter what.
Yeah. And you may have to do it more times than one time.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally. And I get to go into our county jail every week.
Do you?
Yeah,
that's amazing.
So there's a lot of forgiveness talk in there about forgiving the hurt because I have hardly met, I could count on one hand in 2.5 years, the women that I've met with that have not been abused.
Right.
Yeah. And here they are incarcerated, but they have walked through abuse from family, from strangers, from, I mean, it's just, and so that's a hard concept to talk about, but there's so much freedom in it because that unforgiveness.
Yeah.
Like had you not forgiven your mom for things, your mom would still go on living her life.
She would. And that's the point.
Yep.
Knowing that she was forgiven.
And
we just wouldn't have relationship. Or we would have like the shallow relationship where I would make her pay and make her feel stupid or make her feel whatever I felt to feel more,
you owe me,
you know, superior. And so, but you're right. She would keep living her life.
Yeah. And so it just really gets a hold of us.
Yeah.
It really does.
Yeah.
Okay, guys, I know that you're loving this conversation with Andy as much as I am, but I want to take a second real quick and tell you about two sponsors for the happy hour that make this show happen. The first one I want to tell you about is Wink. Okay, so if I gave you the task to go pick out a wine that you love, but it has to be a wine that you haven't had before, where do you start? I want to introduce you to Wink, W-I-N-C. Wink makes it easy to discover great wine by shipping wines that are personalized for you right to your door. It's basically, you guys, the best day of your month, all starting at just $13 a bottle. Here's what you're going to do. You're going to answer a few simple questions in Wink's palate profile quiz. Questions like, how do you take your coffee? And how do you feel about blueberries? Then Wink is going to send you wines that are curated to your specific taste. Also, the more wines that you rate, the more personalized your monthly selections become. Each month, there are new delicious wines like the insanely popular Summer Water Rosé. No membership fees. You can skip any month and cancel at any time. Shipping is covered. And if you don't like a bottle, they're going to replace it with one that you love. Guys, today is a great day to discover great wine. Go to trywink.com/happyhour and you're going to get $20 off your first shipment. That's trywink.com/happyhour. For $20 off. Trywink.com/happyhour. Hey guys, let me ask you this. Are you getting ready to tackle your spring cleaning? I know I am. Last weekend, I cleaned out my bathroom and threw away so much stuff. And you know what else I used? I used my Mr. Clean Magic Eraser to take on the impossible stains that sprays and wipes just cannot handle. I used it on my bathtub. I used it on the sink in my bathroom, and it was amazing. All you have to do, you guys, is wet it under the tap. When it's wet, give it a little squeeze and then it is ready to erase. Basically, my children can do this. And don't worry, I'm going to make them do their own bathrooms. And because it cleans with water alone, you don't have to worry about harsh cleaning fumes or scents. Guys, if you're about to take on your spring cleaning like I am, you should definitely try Mr. Clean Magic Eraser. It makes cleaning your toughest kitchen and bathroom messes fast and easy. Check out MrClean.com/thehappyhour to see more ways the Magic Eraser can help you knock out impossible messes all around the house. Okay, Shame. Oh. Girl, let me tell you. Shame, I don't know any stats on this.
Yep.
But I'm going to guess this is like top three for women.
100%.
You agree?
Yeah.
It's
interesting. It's because I do feel like, I mean, I kind of talk about this, but it feels like just a dark cloak that you mm-hmm. feel like you're supposed to wear. Like, I'm supposed to wear this. And shame creeps in the craziest of ways. You don't even have to have been abused for shame to be a factor. Mm-hmm. It's just like, you shouldn't have thought that way. You made a fool of yourself. Oh, that's shameful. And we walk in it.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
It is like a cloak. I read that when you said that, and I said, that is a really good illustration.
Yeah.
And you almost feel, I remember I felt like this forever. And like you said, I am not free of everything, but I am way further than I was 20 years ago. Like, we'll say that. Yeah. Thank God.
Just ask my husband.
Yes.
Yeah, right?
Yes. But I remember feeling as though it's actually, I have to wear this for the rest of my life to show God how sorry I am.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Because if I feel like this doesn't bother me or I'm free of this, does God think I think like it wasn't that big of a deal?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, I shouldn't have done that, or we shouldn't have been in that scenario, or yeah. So it's almost like our penance. We wear shame as our penance when that is nowhere.
It's so anti-gospel
as
well.
It's so anti-gospel.
Yeah. Yeah. God's like, hey, hello, I sent Jesus.
Literally take that off of you.
For that, yeah. For sure. You said shame gradually destroys your connection to God and in turn your connection to others. Shame is one of the biggest hindrances to true and lasting intimacy between you and God and intimacy with others. Yeah. We were created to be in connection and in loving community. It has never been good for us to be alone.
Yeah.
And shame makes us do that.
Yeah.
Because we feel as though if they knew the real me.
Oh, 100%. If you knew the whole story, I'm afraid you'll reject me. Isn't it so interesting? Everything is about disconnection, because you go even back to the garden. The enemy came to bring disconnection to the very thing that he was jealous of, because he was thrown out. He had no connection anymore. And so it's like, well, if you're going to be created in the image of God, which I wanted to be, I'm going to cut that off.
Yeah.
And so everything seeks to isolate us from community, from loving relationship, from true intimacy. And it works for a while until you're like, I am dying.
Yeah.
And I can't live like this anymore. Yeah.
How did shame affect? I want to ask you two questions.
Sure.
How did it affect your marriage, and how did it affect your ministry?
Yeah. Okay.
You start wherever you want.
Great. I think, well, with marriage, I think, you know, in the book, I do talk about the sexual abuse when I was younger. And so, you know, that creeps in. And then also just growing up in a controlling environment and an unsafe environment. So there was a lot of shame shrouding that. And so when I came into marriage and had a man who very purely loved me, and I did not know how to have true intimacy and connection with him. So even for me, with the pornography, all of these things were in my past, in my sexual past, before I gave my life to Jesus. And so it all mixed in. And he just, it was like we would repel each other. We didn't know how to connect. And we tried. And we would do anything to work this out. But really, I can say now, almost, I think I've been married almost the same amount of time. Mm-hmm. It'll be 17 years.
That's us too.
Yeah, 16, 17. 17 years. We're the worst with numbers.
We're in there somewhere.
Like,
I know.
That we are in a beautiful space, but we've had to work hard for that. But that was both of us getting whole in our own right and rejecting shame and being loved and understanding what true intimacy was. But that's been a wrestle. And I know that is for a lot of marriages, and no one, we're ashamed that we have shame in our marriages,
right?
Because in the church, it should be good, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so that's been massive. And I am so grateful to God and for a husband that we've just been patient with each other and worked that out in marriage. But that really did repel us and keep us from knowing how to really connect. But then in ministry, I mean, we moved and planted a church, and I was still on this massive journey of healing. And I got to a point where we were about a year in, and I told my husband, I said, I can't do this anymore. I don't want, because we lead together. So we both preach, we both teach. We both have very different giftings, but we lead together. And I was like, I know this is like a team thing, but I'm gonna let you do this.
I'm out.
I'm done. Because I I have issues with women still. Even though my relationship with my mom, you know, was being healed, I still was scared of women, yeah, of connection with women. I didn't really want to be around people because I was afraid that they would see the real me. Mm-hmm. I'm a very vulnerable and honest teacher. Once I've walked through something, I will talk about it. But then people think they're best friends with you because they can. And I'm like, oh God, no, we can't be best friends. I can't have any friends. So I just really, it brought a lot of isolation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny. It's not funny at all. That's the wrong way to say it.
I know what you mean.
Crazy
though.
How
yeah.
This one like shame that Satan can use that to literally separate and isolate us from, in most cases, the person that loves us the most, our yeah. spouse.
Yeah.
And then in ministry, because we feel as though I can't be used here yeah. and I'm not worthy of this.
Yeah.
And this like one thing that we have to fight so much, it can just overflow into so many areas yeah. of our life, even parenting.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, yeah, I would think about just like, how did you give me these kids? Because I screw up all the time.
Like, these kids are amazing.
Yeah. And I just feel like I mess up and yeah. am I going to screw them up? And you know, it's just, we just feel
shame comes in there.
Yes.
You're so right.
It is in there so, yeah. so much. You said, well, I wrote this. I started this too because this is so many women's story. Because of my past, this is you saying, I had no idea how to have beautiful, powerful, and pure sex in the covenant of marriage. I didn't even know it was possible.
Yeah.
I talk to many people who think that saving sex for marriage is an outdated concept.
Yeah.
Sex as it was designed is not needs driven. It is a gift to be enjoyed in intimacy, yeah. connection, and covenant till death do us part. And I see that a lot in women who have, you and I have this in common, is that have a sexual past.
Yeah.
And then, so my husband, Aaron, and I, we did not have sex until we got married.
Same.
And so, and then we got.
And then you do, and you're like,
Yeah. And I didn't struggle with that as much, but I hear that all the time of women going, well, is it okay? Like, can I be free in this? Can I enjoy this?
Isn't it interesting?
Because I used to enjoy it a lot, but now I'm married and I don't know how to enjoy it.
Do you know what was interesting is I had to go on this crazy journey, which may sound, it sounds foreign, but if sex is created by God, then what is the purpose of it? And when I broke it down to a cellular level and realized that Christ and the church, this is going to sound crazy, but coming together is actually prophetic of Christ coming back for his church. And if we're created in the image of God, man and woman, and we come together, it glorifies God. And this sounds so crazy because people are like, ew, God and sex. I'm like, you guys, God has zero problems with sex. He thinks it's really amazing.
He created it.
Uh-huh. He wants us to have to really enjoy it. So I know that sounds funny. For some people, it may need to be like in a different way that you get revelation. But for me, I needed the spiritual revelation because I had just, you know, it was meeting needs in a way that wasn't healthy.
Yeah.
Whereas this was, I wanted this to be pure and fun and connecting. And so when I got that revelation that down to a cellular level that God is in it, it was his idea and that it glorifies him. And honestly, it's warfare against Satan. I was like, well, let's go to war
Let's go do it. And you're like, let's go to war,
let's
baby.
Let's go prophesy.
Yeah. Let's do this.
So, yeah.
Mine was different for me because coming from a past like that, I felt very loved from sex. And so then you get married and of course the beginning is great, but then you're married for 12, 15 years.
Well,
you've
that's
got
the
four
fear
kids.
Too. You're like, wait, we're having sex, you and me, for the rest of our lives.
Right. But then when you've got four kids and life is crazy, and then you're not having it as much as you did year one,
right?
Then I would think, oh, you don't love me anymore.
Oh my gosh.
And so
something wrong with us.
Something's wrong with us.
Oh my gosh.
So I had to journey through that 5 or 6 years ago and really come to terms with that it is beautiful and God created it. It is not the only way I know my husband loves me.
Oh my gosh. Well, because then you realize we're going to be real old one day. And I just want to love waking up next to you because when it don't work,
we're still going to love each other.
Yes.
Oh, because I just feel like so many people would struggle with that. And I've talked to women about that have walked through that, which is feeling, I don't know how to do this now.
Yeah. That's real. I'm glad we talked about that. And your perspective is amazing too. Like I felt loved. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that.
It was just what I had to walk through, you know.
That's really good.
And that kind of stuff like that. Okay. I love the truth that you said about shame. You said, I have nothing to prove and nothing to hide. Which, you know, what's funny is when I get up to teach, a girlfriend told me this a long time ago, and I usually tell myself, you have nothing to prove and nothing to lose.
Oh.
And so it just gets me through because I'm like, I have nothing to prove and nothing to lose. But you said about shame, I have nothing to prove and nothing to hide. God takes me as I am. His love reminds me that my true identity is in him. I will no longer walk in the shame of my past, but in the truth and love that set me free.
Yeah.
Oh.
that's a hard place to get to. But I think that that's been one of the most freeing things. It's like, I don't need, like, I love you, Jamie, but I don't need you to even affirm me to know that I'm loved and I have nothing to prove and nothing to hide. Yeah. And to be in that space has been one of the most freeing things.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really cool. I agree with you on all of that. And I have to sometimes remind myself of those things all over again. All
every day.
Over again. No, yeah. You know, I had a moment the other day.
Yeah.
My son is 14.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And he, I have no idea why this came to my mind with shame, except for like approval. And he was telling, we were talking about something and I found out that he likes a girl.
Yeah.
Which has happened before. Fine. Yeah. It's great. But he had told Aaron and he hadn't told me.
Oh, yeah.
And Andy, can I tell you that I felt so like less than as a parent?
Well, I probably would too because if my like, son didn't tell me.
I think I was super emotional. Yeah. I got up from the couch and I started crying. I didn't want him to see me crying because my husband always tells me this is going to happen, that he's going to come.
It's going to shift.
Teenage boys, it'll shift.
Yeah.
So before boys are like, mama, and then they come back. Yeah. And so I'm seeing the shift right before my eyes. And it is because I'm like, oh, you don't trust me as a mom. You don't love me. You don't approve of
what
me.
What do I need to do?
Yes,
what do
I
need
to do? I love you. I love you. I love you.
I'm really trustworthy. Do you want me to bake you something? Make
anything.
Something?
I'll buy you something. Whatever you want.
Yeah.
But it was a moment. And it's dumb because it was a moment in parenting where I was like, okay, him not telling me doesn't mean that he doesn't approve of me.
Yeah.
And I don't need my approval of my 14-year-old, but you know what I mean?
Oh my gosh. Yes. I 100% know.
Yes. I just want to be everything, but he'll come back.
Yeah.
He hasn't left.
I know what you mean.
My husband assures
though.
Me of that. He's like,
but it's almost like the chopping and changing, the shifting of the, who they connect to and who they need in different seasons and letting it
be.
He's
so connected to his daddy. And Aaron always says, this
and you're
is
like, and
really
I want
good.
That. We
I want
that.
Yeah. He's like, he told me. And I was like, I love it. I love it. I love it.
You're like, that's great. That's great.
I know.
That's
I know.
Great.
I had to remind myself that this is okay. This is normal. Okay. So you talk about other things too, which we don't have time to go into all of them, but the one that maybe we should have talked about because it's what I probably see a counselor about the most is control.
I
think I even texted a girlfriend today about something and said, well, this is just showing my control idol.
Yeah.
Control.
I think that's been one of the biggest things I've had to break. Because if you go down to the root system of control is rooted in fear. And you're like, what am I afraid of? Like, it could be something stupid. And that's where
the example I just gave you,
right?
That's control as well.
I want to control. I
want to control what's happening.
I want to control the outcome. I want to control. So then once again, is you always go back to, I find when you're walking through a healing journey is like, when is the first time I felt like this? If you can remember, if the Holy Spirit will reveal that to you and you'll be like, whoa.
Do you remember?
For me, what's interesting is it was when I went back to all the way back to being abused. And I remember, fortunately and unfortunately, I have a very vivid memory. I remember everything, conversations, smells, moments, you know, that sort of thing. And I remember being in that place and that lie was whispered to me, you can't trust anybody. God wasn't here for you. Like, I mean, I didn't even have a relationship with God. How does that lie sink in? And I'm like, oh, that's right. So I'm going to take care of myself. My mom even remembers when I was 3 and 4 years old, I was always such a happy child. And all of a sudden I became a very angry and controlling child.
Was it from, did it go from that?
And we didn't know until I was in middle school and I was walking through, you know, you're walking through puberty and transition and, you know, middle school stuff. And it all came up. And so when that all came up, it made so much sense of why I was like this joyful little toddler. And then I became an angry, violent little girl, not all the time. So I'd be funny, fun, and then angry and violent and controlling. I mean, my room had to be in perfect order. Everything had to be in perfect order. So then that transfers into adulthood. You get married, your husband's in bed. Like, I need to control this situation. I moved to Australia. I stayed there. I thought I was going to move back to America. I can't control this situation. This is freaking me out. I have children. They have needs. I have needs. I have to control this. I have to keep a clean house. Don't play with your toys. Don't play with your toy room. Like, this is my toy room, not yours. You know what I mean? Like, those pillars are in order. Don't sit on the couch. Like, why are you in my house? Take off your shoes. Vacuum.
Yes.
Do that? You're feeling me?
Yeah.
But then I was like, when it was my youngest son, when I made him cry, he had dumped out the Legos and the sound made my skin crawl. And I screamed at him And my daughter was just like so young and all of that. And my husband actually sent me to my room.
Yeah.
He's like, go to your room. I went upstairs and sobbed and cried. And I was like, why can I not? What's going on? And it was almost like God was just going, you just need to let me love you. Let me love you. Let me love you. I'm here. And that it didn't change that. I didn't stop cleaning the toy room or mopping the floor every day but I've started to unravel. It was when I had my fourth child. I couldn't control life anymore. And really I went, what kind of mother do I want to be? Now, do I have my moments? 100%. Do I repent a lot quicker? I just have found you just got to sit with your kids and your head. You just got to say, I'm sorry a whole lot more and really mean it and work on changing.
I think this is, I don't know. I feel like control is more of a woman thing.
I don't
see my husband struggle with this.
No, especially around the house.
You know what I mean?
Like, it's just great. The house is, everything's fine. No.
So, but I think, I like what you said too. Like, does it still happen? And yes, you have to fight it and you're just totally on it. I think that we could sum up a lot of these things in your book of like shame and isolation and control and anger and forgiveness is like, are we still going to struggle?
Yes.
100%. Because we need Jesus and we're broken.
Yeah.
But it's how do we react now versus then?
The choices that we have, it's kind of like, okay, I've just gotten really good at, okay, dismantling the lie or dismantling the, okay, why am I controlling? Why am I screaming at my kids? Why am I doing this? Like, what's going on? Okay, kids, I need a timeout. Just give mom 5 minutes. I'm going to lock the door. Please don't knock on it because I might scream again. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I go in there and then I just sit there and I'm like, what is going on? Like, why am I fearful? Why am I angry? Why am I controlling? Because it's a secondary emotion usually. And when I can get to the bottom of it, usually I can break agreement with a lie I've believed or a fear that I'm holding on to and go, okay, what's the truth? And God just, I know it sounds so crazy, but you just sit there in his love for a minute and go, thank you for loving me in my mess. I'm going to get back out there. I'm going to love my kids well. And I'm going to cuddle them and hold them and it's all going to be good.
Yeah.
You know? So, because we're teaching them then when they're older and they mess up. And, you know, often even when my kids are like, hey, or they try to help me or like, mom, I'm so sorry. I'm like, no, this is actually not your fault. This is mine. So don't you own that for me.
You can own yours.
Yeah. Kids, don't you own that. I'm owning this right now. And you don't need to clean up my mess. I'm not teaching my kids to clean up my mess. That's not their job.
Yeah.
So it's messy and I'll clean up my own mess because I want my kids to clean up their own messes when they're older. I want them to take responsibility for their life. And so I guess
it's just replacing those lies with truth.
Yeah. I know it sounds crazy, but it actually is a constant thing we have to do.
Yeah. And it sounds like when we say it out loud, we're like, just replace lies with truth. It can sound elementary and churchy. Like, you know what?
Give me another answer.
Right. But you're like, actually, that is really, really what it is. I was at, I have a Bible study every Wednesday with some girls out here, and it's just been the most precious thing for me in the past year. And one of them, we were talking about, one of them walked through something pretty tragic a couple of years ago. Yeah. Where she was talking about all the lies that she felt about herself. And exactly some of the things you're saying where
the door opens from childhood
came back and she was like, I'm my mother. I'm this. All these things start lie. Yeah. And she went back to her room and she came back and she had this like tattered and worn stack of index cards.
Oh.
And on one side it said, this is what I'm believing right now. And it is not true. And on the other side, it said, this is what is true about God.
I'm going to go do that.
Yes. And she actually handed them to another girlfriend and she said, you can borrow them. I want them back, but you can borrow them because she was confessing and saying how she was.
Yeah.
And I was like, golly, it was such a beautiful moment because she was very vulnerable, but she brought to the table, here's what I had to do.
Here's how I dismantle the lies.
Exactly. Yep.
And that's the whole point is once again, you got to put on a new pair of glasses. It's kind of like you view the world through, we all view the world differently and through our circumstances, experiences right? So the scratched lenses or whatever that is, you got to clean your lenses, get new lenses, view the world in a different way. And honestly, that's just how you continue to do that.
That's good.
Because just like your glasses get smudged, so you got to clean them every once in a while. It's just life.
It is life. Okay. So Annie, she is free. I cannot highly recommend it enough. Learning the truth about the lies that hold you captive. So this came out in the fall.
Yeah.
Are you writing again?
I am.
Can you tell us?
Yeah, I can tell you. Okay. So I just finished my second manuscript and I had to cut 4,000 words, which was harder than writing the book. I was like cutting out that's and ands, like word by word, picking words
out.
And
then you find out that was only like 170 words.
Well, that's like devastating. I start crying. I'm like, oh. So just turn that in, and it's going to come out in the fall as well. And it's called Fake or Follower. And it's the subtitle is Refusing to Settle for a Shallow Faith. Now, I love pastoring in New York because I mean, our church is about 75 to 80% millennial. And so it's this amazing community of people that are just desperate for what does it look like to really follow Jesus? Not, you know, not just going to church. Like if I get 100% of the Godhead, what should my life look like? And so it's just a very confronting book. Like, are we faking it or are we following Jesus?
That's good.
And it's honestly because I was confronted with that over the last couple of years. Hey, you know, you're not allowed to write or speak if you're not going to live it. You're not allowed. I'm like, okay. So we hit some very, very big topics and things that are going on in the world today as well, and how we follow Jesus through that.
I love it.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations on turning that in.
Thank you.
I know.
You know.
Yes.
You know. I'm like, I had another baby. I had babies back to back.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was so hard.
Yeah.
I'm just curious from a writer standpoint. Yeah. Do you write at home or do you go away?
I do a little bit of both.
Okay.
So it depends on kind of like deadlines and stuff like that. So I know it sounds funny, but rolling out of bed and getting my kids off to school and staying in my pajamas with a cup of coffee in your bed is actually my safest place. Oh. Or I have to just go to a hotel room where I know I'll be alone and I can order every meal up to my room. Mm-hmm. I actually can't, I get very distracted easily.
Yeah.
So I've got to be in a really safe, peaceful place where I can just kind of get downloads and write.
Yeah.
So what about you?
I went away. It was hard for me to separate home to work.
To clean.
Yes. And I don't know if you felt like this too, yeah. because writing is not your first job.
No.
It was hard for me to, how do I do what I have to do every day and then write a book? And I know people do it all around the world. It was hard for me.
So I went away. Hard. Well, and that's why I would go away for chunks, because I was like, okay, I'm not going to hit deadlines. I would chip away. Yeah. And then I knew what was really hard for me too. We have such an amazing team, but I was very much away from the office and from our team. And it was like, I've missed them, yeah. you know? But I had to choose to be more around my kids at that uh-huh. time, because I was like, if I'm going to be making sacrifices here, I'm going to be mornings and afternoons at home with my kids yeah. and then writing.
Yeah.
So yeah.
It's a work. Okay. So I love asking my people yeah. three things they're loving and what they're reading.
So three things I'm loving. Well, I'm laughing because we're in Texas right now, which is very exciting for me and my daughter, who I brought with me. But our whole family, I know we're a little bit behind the eight ball. We've started watching Fixer Upper together.
Okay, yes.
Okay, so we are loving Fixer Upper, which cracks me up because we live, like I said, in a small apartment. So basically, we all have to repent of envy at the very end, because these prices, I'm like, guys, I pretty much think we could buy that house tomorrow. Like, do you know what I mean? And look at this huge kitchen. I mean, some of their like dining tables are as big as my living room.
So
I'm just,
kitchen.
You know, I'm like, congratulations, guys. So we're a loving Fixer Upper. The other thing that I'm really loving at the moment, I don't know, are you reading the Passion Translation at all?
Is it?
It's a translation of the Bible, which is the New Testament and Psalms and Proverbs. And I have just started reading the Passion Translation, but I haven't been this excited to read the Word of God in a really long time. So I'm just being honest. Sometimes, you know, how you're like, I love reading the Bible every day, and sometimes I'm too tired. So mm-hmm. can we be real
yeah,
here?
We're real.
But the Passion Translation has gotten me so excited about the Word. When I was reading the letters that Paul wrote, I was sobbing, like understanding what God has done for us. So the Passion Translation is just—
Love it.
Yeah.
Love it.
Okay. I am also obsessed right now with Full Fat Cream on and in everything. I don't know why.
Why?
I don't know. I'm just like, I got into this thing where I usually have black coffee.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But I started buying like this organic full cream, and now it's really bad. Like I just can't stop, but it is better for you.
I have heard that actually.
Only if you're totally paleo and keto, but I'm not, because I also just had a biscuit this morning while I was here. So
have you ever made
count.
The bulletproof coffee?
Yes.
Okay. I have it, but I have some friends that love
it. It's really good. And I'm turning 40 this year.
Me too.
You
this in May.
Okay.
We're like sisters.
Oh my gosh, we really are.
When are you turning 40?
September.
Okay.
Yeah.
How do you feel? Because I'll let you know, first of all, I feel 100%. I'm good. I love it. I'm ready.
I am 100% good and ready to turn 40. I had a moment the other day where I was trying on clothes at Urban Outfitters and it was Stevie Nicks. You know, the song, I'm Afraid of Changing, because I built my life around you. And she says, like, children get older and I'm getting older too. And I started crying while I saw my reflection in the mirror while I was getting dressed. I was like, this is hilarious. What is wrong with me? So it's funny. I am good with it. And I actually want to be a person who embraces age and like laugh lines and wrinkles. Cause my son asked me the other day, my youngest, he goes, what are those lines there? Aww. And I was like, well, you get those from laughing a lot through life. Yeah. And he's like, oh, when will I get those? So I was like, you know what? I'm going to change the paradigm and I'm going to be okay with getting older. And, you know, so yeah. I'm ready.
But, I'm ready too.
Yeah. And so, and as for reading, I think when I'm writing, I find it really hard to read other content because I don't necessarily want to be swayed. But I did start reading A.W. Tozer, The Pursuit of God. I just went back to some classics of what does this look like? And I feel like he's writing it to our generation.
You can't go wrong with that.
So, yeah.
Okay. One thing before we go, I forgot. I wanted to ask you about your conference.
Oh, yes.
Please tell us.
Oh, my God. Gosh. So, okay, because the book is called She Is Free. I mean, that's a whole journey. But my husband basically spoke to me and said, hey, I feel like you're withholding, you know, what God's done in you. And I got the words She Is Free, looked it up, Googled it, and it was actually a porn and sex toys website and made me so angry. So I was like, all right, well, I'm going to buy that.
I'm going to buy that.
Yeah. And so we actually ended up getting the domain and launching a gathering for women who are just about being set free and bringing freedom in their spheres of influence. And that can look like anything. So we attach ourselves to causes and, you know, anti-human trafficking. I've got beautiful friends that are working with the FBI and the CIA and doing things. So we just are partnering in any way that we can to equip women to not just be made whole and set free in themselves, but to release that wherever they are. And so we gather in October, and this year we're actually in a venue that will sell out this year. So we're trying to figure out what to do. It's in New York City. So
and yeah. October has to be a beautiful time to come to New York City.
It's the best.
Yeah.
So we'll be on the Upper West Side at a beautiful venue called Symphony Space, and it's on sheisfree.com. So if you want to come join us.
I will put all the links up there for everyone to find it. Andy, this has been so much fun.
I love you.
This is so great.
Who knew?
I know. This is the best. So
thank you for having me.
Congrats on your second book.
Thank you.
Have fun in Peru.
I will.
All the things. Thanks for coming on the Happy Hour. Yeah,
thanks.
Guys, don't forget, spring is upon us, and that means spring cleaning is here as well. This year, I tried Mr. Clean Magic Eraser, and it worked like magic. It cleaned through tough stuff that my sprays and my wipes just couldn't do, like burnt-on stains on my stovetop and that stubborn ring around the bathtub. It was so easy to use, you guys. You just wet it, squeeze it, and it is ready to erase. See what cleaning wonders it can do for your home by visiting MrClean.com/thehappyhour. Okay, was I right or was I right? Andy is just a joy to sit down and chat with. We had such a great time. I cannot wait to visit her in New York City. I told you that you're going to love it, and I know that you did. I would love to hear what you loved. Find me on Instagram and tell me what you loved, or come on over to our Facebook group. We have a Happy Hour Facebook group, and we chat about the shows there. Look up jamieivy.com/happyhourfacebook. Guys, today's show was edited by Chris with Podshaper, and the music was developed for the show by Matt Graham. Next week, my guest is Marshawn Evans. We chatted together in a hotel room a couple weeks ago, and you're going to love her. Guys, enjoy your week. Share the show with a girlfriend and have a happy hour with a friend. Oh, and I must say, today's my dad's birthday. Happy birthday, Dad.